Welcome to a special encore presentation of Compassion Radio 360.
Good morning, honey. It's time for Compassion Radio's 360 program, the end of the week. Hopefully, it'll launch to a great weekend for all of us. If you're a worshiping Christian, you're probably looking forward to what's happening on Sunday. There's usually a lot of joy getting together, celebrating the good things God has done throughout the week. And today's story is about the good things that God's people have done in our own country to help others be able to have reason to celebrate come the weekend. It is about not just hope, but practical help.
Yes.
In our own country, there might be a lot of polarized views on what this article talks about, but we'll engage each of those points one by one.
Yeah, I love this article because it does give hope. The reason that it's polarizing is because it's the whole idea of the welfare family, and that has some negative connotations, unfortunately, in this country. This is about a specific program that's been happening in Seattle, Washington, not far from where we live, actually. Yeah. And they have a guaranteed income program in that county around Seattle. Now, Seattle is a, for the most part, well-to-do area of the country.
It's one of the world's major tech hubs. Of course, the home of Amazon, Microsoft, and a whole bunch of other big companies the world knows very well. It also has made the news in the past couple of years because of problems with homelessness and encampments downtown Seattle. There's an impression now by some of the media that it's a no-go zone. They can't even enjoy the city. We have plenty of friends that live in Seattle say we have problem spots like every city has, like L.A. or Denver or New York City. But the money hasn't gone flying away. People haven't left their jobs. The companies are not leaving King County. There's not a problem with living in Seattle. There is a problem with not caring about what's happening in your own city and abandoning those who have needs, which is what this program is about. Now, this program of guaranteed income or basic income is not for everybody. This is not somebody just throwing money every which way. No city in America or the world, for that matter, has every dollar necessary to take care of every need. This is about a targeted program saying, what if we actually went to working people at the lowest rung on our financial scale here in a very expensive city and see if it would make any difference at all in the outcomes for the families that we would supplement by a certain figure? And it came out to only $500. That's all I could justify for this program. It's not a place where you're going to flourish or be rich just by having a professional job. It's a hard-working city.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of people that work hard in these cities that serve those who make the better incomes. We all know that in every city. The people they chose for this program were already productive people, but they were also under major emotional, social, financial,
even medical,
and medical stress. How could $500 a month for a family make a difference at all when the cost of living in that city is so huge? Well, they didn't know. They had to experiment. So let's read some of that article today.
The Seattle Area Guaranteed Basic Income pilot gave low-income residents $500 a month to help reduce poverty. Employment in the group nearly doubled.
They gave them $500 and their employment doubled?
They were able to complete training for some job requirements. Some of them were able to use that money to pay off other debts so that they could find better employment. And numerous unhoused residents were able to secure housing. They were able to put away or save up a little bit in order to get into some sort of low-income housing that they could not be out on the streets. Like you talked about earlier, there is a problem in Seattle of unhoused people. And so this pilot program helped many of those people find and secure housing. The organization called the Workforce Development Council of Seattle King County launched this program, and it was a guaranteed basic income. There was 102 participants, and it happened back in the fall of 2022. A research firm called Applied Inference revealed that the $5,000 total payments, so that's all the money that was spent, $5,000.
$5,000 for 10 months.
Yeah. Improved quality of life, housing, and employment outcomes. So that is a big thing in itself right there.
Okay, so they chose some metrics to measure. Would affect what? Would it affect what they chose to buy? Would they start spending on things that were frivolous? Would they just throw it away? Would they go for entertainment? Or would they go for basic essentials? And if they did pay off essentials or step up into more secure housing, how would that affect everything else? And so they actually measured the big picture. How many stayed employed? How many got better incomes? How many actually were able to be on the job site longer? Those kind of things were being measured for all these people.
Mm-hmm.
And 100 people is not exactly a very large sample. And we often forget that in many places, over a half of the people that are considered homeless in a community are actually working every day.
Mm-hmm. Living in their cars or in a tent or in a camper even somewhere.
And that's not just day laborers either. All kinds of jobs that are hungry for people to work. And they would gladly take people in that they can at least be there on time and be there reliably. And they will take them. We cannot rely on a caricature of them as being unwilling to work because so many of them are working.
Yeah, absolutely. I did a little research, and there are 11 states throughout the United States that have this guaranteed basic income program. Now, some of them are
different. They're pilots. This is not, again, universal for everybody in the state.
Correct.
Yeah.
They have put it to the test in a lot of these places, and a lot of them have decided to continue these programs because they have been so successful in helping. All of them have different metrics that they measure. Some of them require the participants to report what they spend, what they use the
money
for. Others don't. Others say, this is just your money. You do with it what you want.
We'll check in with you later.
Yeah. And both programs are successful. Both programs have shown that the majority of those, when asked, tell you, I spent it on medicine. I spent it on past due bills, buying things that my children need for school or participating in extracurricular activities or whatever. All of the people that were part of this program used this money for taking care of their families. They were not using it to spend on frivolous items. Now, some people would say, oh, they're just going to use it for drugs or they're just going to use it for things that some people think are not important.
Right. That's a presupposition here that their choices will be poor, so we should not therefore enable the possibility that somebody might spend some money that we give them on something that we don't approve of personally. That's the risk that the state was willing to take, saying we have got to learn what really happens with our money when we do this kind of program.
Yeah.
So they just removed the arguments about personal giving towards things that you don't trust and said, we have a problem. We have got to figure out something to solve this.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be the first step in discovering what's true and what's false.
Yeah.
So the whole experiment, for me, is not just a metric of how much it improved the lives of those who got the money, but how much it confirmed or repudiated our preconceptions of what happens when generosity rules the day and what people do with generosity when they receive it.
Yeah. I remember having a conversation years and years ago with Norm Nelson. We were talking about people who stand on the street corners with a sign saying, anything will help, looking for food, looking for work. I remember the conversation being not surprising to me, but very encouraging in a lot of ways because Norm said, you know, I don't care what they use the $20 for that I give them. It's not up to me. Nobody tells me what to do with my money. I just know that it's right for me to help somebody who is in need. And that has been the baseline for Compassion Radio for all these years. It is right to help someone with a need. And we know as believers in Jesus that Jesus was all about helping those in need. He lifted up those who were poor, those who were infirm, those who were marginalized, and he was generous to them. So this program to me, even though it is a basic government program, and a lot of the funding, which I know people are going to ask about, comes from private foundations that want to invest in their own communities.
What can we do together?
Right.
So the outlay for the entire state of Washington was a whopping, what, $200,000? They spend more than that putting in a streetlight. The cost to do any public project that we all benefit from is usually much larger and takes years of planning. Well, if you have people that are flooding into a city because of some economic crisis, like the end of COVID when this all happened, and they're living on the streets because they've lost everything and there's no jobs for them to go to because the whole country was shut down, this was an opportune time to address that issue. The total cost to the residents of Washington State came out to a couple of pennies per person in the entire state to see if this might work. And what were the results again? People's quality of life improved. They stayed employed. They got better jobs or increased the income they got from their jobs. All kinds of virtuous cycles began.
Well, many of them were able to gain secure health care through better jobs, through positions. Many of them even began to invest in life insurance plans for their children. It says that the employment rate almost doubled from 37% before the program to 66% post program. It seems odd to me we hear the stories of, oh, well, if we just give money to people for free and not require them to do anything for it, they're just going to not work and still be homeless. This is not true. It's proven in programs like this that people who are given a leg up in mm-hmm. some way, just a little bit of help, $500 a month is not a lot of money. It's beneficial to them because it keeps them stress-free in some ways.
Let's explore that a little bit. Where would that money go? Well, if you're trying to get a job and the requirements of the job are that you have a permanent address and you don't have one, you don't have a P.O. box, you don't have any of that kind of stuff. And the government says, you know what, if you can just put in $400 a month, we can get you an apartment. And they already have these programs going in the state to get people off the streets and into permanent housing. And they give them the money then from another department, say, use it somehow, improve your life. And they say, well, I really want to get off the streets. Mm-hmm. So they put all that money, shove it into the cost of renting an apartment. Now you are now able to apply for all kinds of jobs you weren't able to apply to before. That's one huge opportunity booster right there. And now you can put your kids in school, and now you're free in the daytime to go get a job. Suddenly, opportunity presents itself. Mm-hmm. Is this not an investment in the security of your community as much as it is helping individuals get out of bondage, of poverty, and or debt?
Absolutely.
Your gift today will provide the means for us to begin some new initiatives with our Bible and Relief Partners that reach farther than we've ever gone before. The first and best way to reach us is through our website, CompassionRadio.com. It's available 24/7. You can also support us with a call during Pacific Time business hours at 1-800-868-2478. You can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, no matter where you are. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. We so much value your messages and letters. And know this, your gift is deeply appreciated. Thank you for loving us in this way.
Is this not an investment in the security of your community as much as it is helping individuals get out of bondage, of poverty, and or debt?
Absolutely. Participants also reported being more financially stable, meaning that they could pay off bills, like we said, and debts.
Or pay bills on time.
That had been building up, yeah. And there was more savings for them for their future. For instance, the percentage of participants with savings accounts, with any kind of savings at all, increased from 24% to 35% for families with children. This increased from 0% to 42%. So you and I know, having four children, trying to provide for them, choosing to have me stay home with them as they grew up and you work, it was difficult to have any kind of savings.
Every financial advisor or coach that we've heard of in the past 30 or 40 years has been preaching the same principle. Just take care of these things, snowball the debts down, and put a little aside. So you have something to take care of a need if it comes up. Basic financial advice that we're all told they're now able to do. And partly because I think they had Chase Bank involved with this. They now have the opportunity to walk right in and say, hey, I'm part of the program. Mm-hmm. What can you do for me? Because they probably got given a card saying, you want to start a savings account for your kids? Come on in. Yeah. So the introduction, the relationships, the networking, the kind of opportunity that comes through these social network is now vastly expanded for those 100 people.
Mm-hmm. The percentage of those able to consistently pay their bills also doubled from 19% to 38%. People were chipping away past debts more consistently than they had been before.
Maxing out credit cards for years, trying to keep things rolling. This $500 could take care of some immediate needs, but it's not going to get rid of the structural debt they've got. They've got to work it down over time. But it's a start. And if nothing else, for those who are deeper in debt than those who came off the streets, they're seeing that there's a different way of thinking or living. And what if we worked cooperatively? Could we be more productive and help more of our society? Could we be involved more in solving problems ourselves? Mm-hmm. They're being preached the gospel of participation. If there's nothing I want to learn from this article than that, it's that everybody can contribute to the good of all.
Yeah.
This is not a socialist argument. This is about community. And communities have to come together with basic rules of engagement. How are we going to live together as a city? What kind of laws are we going to pass that we will obey? What kind of services are we going to offer that will help all of us? Communities have always been like that. And cooperation is at the core of what it means to be American. Individualism can only flourish when other people are footing the bill for everything else. They live by this. And that's how communities survived. They didn't fall apart because people were not left hanging out to dry. We do have a scripture from the Old Testament, and people that have objected to the programs we're talking about right now have tended to be very fundamentalist on the right end of the political spectrum and Christian. And they've been taught basically this individualistic individualism that says, you know, bootstraps, pull yourself up, God favors those who work hard, all that kind of rhetoric. They are thoroughly committed to the inerrancy of Scripture. Well, the Old Testament talks about how we ought to be working with those who have needs. And, for example,
Proverbs 19:17 says, "Whoever cares for the poor makes a loan to the Eternal. Such kindness will be repaid in full and with interest."
And with interest. That is a financial model statement. And God is saying, you want to talk about money? I'll talk about money. This is how I work with money.
Right.
Take care of those who have needs. You take care of them. Because when you do, they've got an IOU they pass on to me. I hold that, and I'm good at taking care of my debts. And if God himself is willing to say, of the poor, they're my peeps. I'm watching out for them. And on my good faith and credit, you can trust that I will take care of this debt to you.
Yeah.
God's saying to those who are faithful and called according to his purposes. In the Old Testament, of course, we're talking about a tribal society that was becoming more and more urban as it went along through history, became more and more organized, eventually had kings and had cities and had civil governments. And during all of that time, the kings themselves are saying in the Proverbs, because most of it was written by Solomon, this is good principle. This is the idea of how to live in a way that God will honor.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't start with, if you have enough money, if you have enough left over after I've taxed you as the king, if you are so inclined, take care of the poor, because then God will notice.
Yeah.
He doesn't start with any of that. He doesn't put any conditions whatsoever other than to listen and to obey. That's a tough thing for us to hear, and we really don't want to have to deal with, well, what ifs? What if they spend the money on something I don't approve of? This is not about conditional giving, where we make a contract with somebody. If you shape up, then you're worthy of my generosity.
Mm.
Treat them like I treat them. That's it.
Yeah. Jesus himself says in the book of Matthew, if someone asks you for something, give it to him. If someone wants to borrow something from you, don't turn them away. Jesus himself is saying, don't ask questions. Like you just said, honey, don't ask questions about what are you going to do with this if you borrow it? If you need it, what are you going to spend this on? Just give it. And like Norm told me all those years ago, it's not my job to figure out what they're going to spend it on or to demand to know what they're going to spend it on.
Yeah, I'm not the thought police here.
Right.
And we, when we travel on behalf of Compassion Radio to report stories and to bring relief aid and stuff to different camps around the world or be part of a program that is improving the lives of people in different countries because our Compassion people have sent us. They want us to go out there and actually do the work and bring the stories back to inspire us to better works to come. When we do that, we know we're going to be meeting people that we would not have met had you all not sent us to do these things.
Yeah.
And when we do, we have the principle of divine appointments. God is setting up the calendar. We're walking into it. We didn't plan who we're going to meet on that street corner or on that church patio or in that work site or in the middle of that refugee camp. God did.
Mm-hmm.
He knew exactly who we'd be meeting at those times and what their needs were. I don't have the time to figure out all that God knows about this person.
Right.
I do have a moment in time to be able to engage, and I rely upon the godly people around me to say, where do we best put our efforts and best put our gifts? If we're going to leave money behind, who do you know needs it the most? Let's pray about this. Let's ask God to help us do the most with what he's given us to give, and to do it, and to trust that he's going to do something with that, because God always increases. He doesn't decrease what he puts into use.
Yeah.
It's always an investment with God. The other principle, I think, is about the gleaning. The whole idea of how does God take care of the welfare needs of a community or those who are not part of your community but are sojourning with you, that are living within your community. You don't feel like they're part of your normal group, but they're here anyway. Often, the Mosaic Law talks about the gleaning principle. He literally tells those who are managing or owning property, you're going to farm. And I'm telling you, once you brought your first fruits to me and taken care of the priests and taken care of the civil administration, then do your harvest. When you get to a reasonable end to your harvest, don't go around picking up every seed and double picking every row. Send your people home to relax and then tell everybody else in the community, fields are open. They own it now. You don't. So for the time of the end of this harvest, they're the ones that actually get to own the produce from this field, because I'm giving it to them through you. And that principle has been something that took care of generations for thousands of years for the poorest of the poor and those who were migrants, those who were the undocumented workers that were in your land. Okay, that was what God was doing back in Mosaic law time.
Taking care of the strangers and immigrants.
Yeah. So if that's the principle that God has already baked into the oldest parts of the Old Testament.
Well, read the book of Ruth to see a perfect example of that story.
The future of Israel was dependent upon how well Boaz and his family obeyed that law.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to all kinds of new opportunities for the kingdom of Israel because of that. And David, he's a direct descendant of this principle put in action. And his grandmother, going back generations, went through all this. They benefited from these principles put into action and obeyed.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to talk just biblically about what's going to be good for society and good for us as families, good for our relationship with God, and good for our reputation and our integrity, look at those principles, the ones that God implemented, and said, this is what I expect of you.
Mm.
No matter what your political system is where you live now, no matter whether you have the opportunity to vote for your leaders or you live under kings, that was irrelevant to God's principles. As you live where you are, these things are eternally true.
Mm-hmm.
And my generosity is something I expect you to start with, not end with. When you have a little bit left over at the end of things and you paid all your bills, then think about the poor. No, he says at the front, think about me and my people that are serving me and serving you, and think about the poor, and don't exploit the people that work for you, and don't overexploit your land and make it infertile to where it can't produce for anybody else. And don't overpick it. Be generous with what you have every time.
Mm.
That is the big principle. I think what's happening in Washington State in this example is just one of 11 or so states that are maintaining this program, are continuing it. There are many other states that have decided, even with the evidence of success, that they would not continue it because of uproar in conservative or far-right circles saying, no, you're not giving my money to those people. Well, it's not their money, it's our money together as a state. The taxes have to go to something. Personally, I would like to see the taxes go to something that actually improves the safety and the equity of our community where it is and take care of the people that are here instead of it being siphoned off somewhere far distant. Make the programs happen locally first and prove to your states that it works.
Well, honey, the programs are not funded primarily with tax dollars.
Again,
they are primarily funded by foundations and joint relationships, cooperatives with some tax money involved used for these programs. So it's not even my tax dollars going to this thing. It is a combination of funding from multiple sources.
And down to brass tacks again about this program in Seattle. It was documented over those 10 months that those families that participated, their average income rose from $2,900 a month to $3,400 or so a month, a jump of over $400 in income for their job alone, in addition to the $500. So their position has gone from like $3,000 to about $4,000because of that investment in them. What are they doing with that money? They're paying their bills on time. They're not going into debt. They're not becoming a drain on society. They're actually able to work more hours or work better, work harder, and produce.
Mm-hmm. They're productive members of society.
Everything they buy is going into sales tax. Every time they're filing their income taxes on time, the money's going to the government appropriately, and they're earning more money. They're paying more to the government. This is about investing in us.
And in some of the other states, families that are on this program or that have been on this program have been able to get out of other social welfare programs.
Yes, step out of other kind of programs that are costing far more per dollar to supply. So what if you could invest something that always brought you back $2 or $3 for every dollar you put in? Would that be worth it as a society to invest in?
Yeah.
Well, we won't get into all the other social issues that go with it, but I mean, we know overseas, it's been proven that every dollar that goes into healthcare reduces the overhead of health cost for the population by $2 or $3 or $4 because people get sick less. That's a whole nother big thing to tackle later. But just for this microcosm of one city saying, we can try this. And actually watch the evidence. We'll do evidence-based experiments here. Whatever comes out of that, we'll learn from it and we'll respect it. If it really doesn't work, and those who are naysayers say it doesn't work, then we'll walk away from it. We'll do something else. Mm-hmm. But we're going to try. Without a doubt, this program was a success.
Absolutely.
And it's one of the reasons why, even in the face of opposition from those who don't want to see tax dollars going towards anybody who doesn't, quote, deserve it, They said, yes, they do, because they're us. Mm-hmm. And we are going to invest in our community so we can get them off the streets as much as possible and get them productive and making the money they need to supply their families' needs. Mm-hmm. It's worth it to us. I think it ought to be worth it to the church, too. Mm-hmm. And that's my appeal to you if you're in a church right now and looking for opportunities to improve your communities. Look into this. Look for articles on cities and communities that have decided to go with basic income programs and see what could happen if you joined in on this. Everybody has an ambition to be middle class in America or to be ultra rich. No one has an ambition to be poor. Those who are poor would love to join the club. They're not going to get there if they have no opportunities. And the middle class is not going to suffer for more people in the middle class. As long as we come up together, it is blessing. Build people up. Don't tear them down. Don't prevent them. Don't exploit them. That principle is all over the Bible.
Pray for the spirit of generosity to flood your heart.
Yeah. Produce fruit that's going to produce fruit that's going to produce fruit and benefit many others.
Yeah.
So that's our appeal to you all. Look it up. The link to the article that we have been discussing today is on our website at CompassionRadio.com in our podcast section. Thanks for joining us today on Compassion Radio's 360 program. We'll see you next Monday for Compassion Radio's Chasing the Word. Call us today at 1-800-868-2478.
Our mail address is
Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877.
Or give online at CompassionRadio.com.
We need you, friend, so contact us today.